Hello there. You're listening to Audacity, the Authentic Entrepreneur podcast. I'm your host, Claire Ackers. In this space, you will hear me talk about anything and everything you need to be an authentic entrepreneur so that you can not only grow a wildly successful business that gives you the wealth and freedom you dream of, but so that you can also stay true to yourself and your values, and also have massive impact with your work. I'm a mum of three, serial entrepreneur, business coach, and cheerleader for those of you who have been brave and audacious enough to set up in business. So, welcome to the Audacity Podcast. I am so glad you're here, and let's dive in to the episode. So today I am joined by Abby Coleman, who is the founder of MMB Magazine and is, well, it's fair to say, a passionate advocate of helping families return to the workplace. Abby, thank you so much for joining me today. How are you?
Great, thank you. Pleasure to be here.
Yeah, and it's a pleasure to be here again, isn't it? Just dropping the curtain a little bit. We originally tried to do this mid-lockdown, but well, honestly, I think I had a small breakdown and never quite actually managed to make it to air. So, and stuff's evolved for you as well, hasn't it? So I'm excited that you are here to have a second chat with me, and I can't wait to see where the conversation goes this time, because I think it meandered all over the place last time. So do you want to start us off then, Abby? Give us a bit of an intro to you and your story and how you got to be where you are today, if you would.
Okay. Pretty simply, I've worked in recruitment for, gosh, over 20 years for all my crimes. I must have done something seriously wrong in a previous life. 10 years running my own business, trying to change the way that recruitment happens. And then I guess, as the NHS like to put it, I was a geriatric mother at around about 35, 36, having my first child, and massive wake-up call. I was probably guilty of those conversations that people who don't have children or maybe have older children forgotten how things happen and sort of needs, etc., happen, and a just completely non-understanding of people looking at part-time flexible work when I'd been in recruitment, but then found myself on the other side of it. And although I was running my own business, just realized that people in the business place had changed their perception of me, because I was back and, oh, you're just playing at it now, oh, you just be working part-time, and how they shifted me in the workplace. And from that, I started having some conversations with some really, like, I would class amazing women who have kind of made it in their professions, and they were saying the same things. And I was thinking, and almost, I guess it's like imposter syndrome, isn't it, where you think, oh, well, I understand why it's happening to me, but how on earth can this be happening to these other women? And from that just came this idea, which is, do you know what, I want to launch something that's going to support working women who've got children or looking to have children or returning to the workplace with children, to be a no-nonsense one-stop shop for them to come to get the info they want. Because I mean, at the time, and I know things have moved on now, but at the time it was like Mumsnet and things like that, which are great to go if you Google things you never think you will Google in your life when you've had a baby.
Usually at 2 a.m.
vomit, yeah, and you'll be like looking at color charts. But it's not necessarily somewhere you'd go to for maternity pension advice, you're working right, understanding how to advance your career, feeling if you're sort of stuck in that rut. So I was like, you know, where is something that hits that ground? So that's how MMB was launched, and that's kind of where I've ended up, where I am now.
I just love that. I love the fact that you experienced a problem, you saw the problem, you saw it was wider than yourself, and you thought, you know what, I'm gonna be the change here, I'm gonna take on the baton, never mind I've got a small person clinging to me, I am going to change the world on this issue. And it seems to be working out for you, doesn't it?
Yeah, so much so that I went and shot myself in lockdown, and Eliza came along. So at the sort of age of 42, expecting another child very unexpectedly, with an 8-year-old already, sort of brought everything round. But what I would say is, unfortunately, nothing's changed from those conversations that I had when I first had Kimmy around about 8 years ago. So as much as, yeah, things are going great and we're seeing small changes with the people that we're working with and it's really having impact, you know, those conversations are still happening out there. Things aren't changing. And I know when COVID hit, on a sort of selfish point of view, I thought, do you know what, this could be the turning for flexible working. This could be the change that we need to see for men and women of all ages, children, no children, with that flexibility of workplace, and closing that gender pay gap and just really seeing things change. But now conversations are already flipping back to, how do we get people back into the workplace? How do we get everybody in the UK to attend work at 8:30 a.m. and leave at 6 p.m.? Because that just makes perfect sense, doesn't it? We won't have problems with the road. We won't have problem with childcare, nursery, people's needs. You know, that's how we've always done it. And I think that tends to be the conversations that I always experience. But that's what we've done. It works. So why should we fix it? So unfortunately, COVID got us all excited thinking this could be the change. The conversation, the narrative's gone back to that. Let's get people back into businesses. Let's see them at their desk and let's measure productivity by seeing somebody rather than output.
Yeah. There is so many different directions I want to take this conversation, and I'm so excited. I don't know where to start, but let's get right to the heart of the matter. So the people listening to this podcast are authentic entrepreneurs. They are committed to, whether they are independent or whether they are growing a multi-million pound international company, to doing things differently, to being values-led, to growing passion-led companies that are actually having a positive impact in the world. What can we do? You know, you're seeing it from both sides of the veil, as it were. What's your advice about what could employers do to pave the way and make things easier for families to return to the workplace?
Yeah, and I think that's key. It is a family. You know, you've got, a large percentage will be two people, whether they're together or not together, who will potentially be raising that child. I mean, when you go down to a single parent, it's God, the additional, you know, what they have to do and how that support can make a change for them. I think from a point of view, first of all, if you're an employer, no matter what size you are as an employer, it's kind of sort of challenging your own unconscious bias and your own mindset. And I think I alluded to it at the very beginning of our podcast, is that it's those predetermined sort of notions that maybe you don't really want to sort of bring up, but you kind of mutter sometimes in the back of your head. And I think we chatted briefly before this podcast, sort of the only way I can really sort of explain it really quickly is it's that whole cigarette break thing. When you used to be able to smoke, and cigarette smokers got 15 minutes outside, and it would be the negativity within a team because, well, they get 15 minutes extra break, we don't. And the pushback and the how that would break a team. And I think sometimes when you have parents returning into the workforce or parents who are asking for flexibility, sometimes there can be the pushback, we've never done it that way. But also you can get the breakup in a team of seeing, well, why are they getting that? I'm not getting that. So I think first of all, the key factor for any employer is to understand their team, whether parents or not parents. You could have someone who has family that's ill, you could have someone who's a carer, you could have someone who just loves getting out at the weekend, you could just have someone who wants that flexibility, you could have someone who only wants to work in the office. And I think it's sitting down and chatting with your team and understanding, if you know, if they had a wish list, what could make this a better employer, a better environment for them? How could it add to their life, an extension to their life? How could it make them enjoy coming into work and working for that employer? But at the same time, making sure before you have that conversation to really check your mindset and your self-awareness. You know, that experience, maybe you were a working mum who felt that you were forced out of your employer and that's why you set up this business in the first place. Is there a part of you that kind of goes, well, I didn't have it easy, so why should you? No matter how small, through to kind of really looking at that unconscious bias for getting that sorted so that you can help employers if they're coming back into work or in work but needing some flexibility, but also stamping out the other team's unconscious bias. So when you've talked to the team and you've talked to your parents or your working parents, your working mums about the difference for them that they may need in, it could be flexibility in work, drop off, pick up, school at holidays, just knowing actually the support's there, having a mentor in place to help them be able to plan out their career progression, all those kinds of things, is making sure that that's echoed within the team. Because it just takes that, you know, that comment, oh, you've timed it right to be leaving, it's all right, isn't it, for you leaving at 4 o'clock or something like that. But they don't see the hours that they then pick up later, if they do pick those hours up later. So it's making sure the whole team's on the same page, the whole team's happy, the whole team knows they're in an environment that if there's something they want to bring to their line manager to discuss, or their, you know, their employer, to say, this could really make a difference for me, that that conversation happens, and it happens for everybody, but then it's echoed down for everybody. So you also don't get those comments, those little snipes, that sort of infighting in a team as well. You get a really happy, confident team who know they can approach the business and have the conversation if they need to, because others have done it and look how they've been supported. But I think there's lots of different ways an employer can support a working, I'm going to say working mum for this instance. And it could be you've got someone returning to work, you know, giving them that support, making sure before they go on maternity leave that you've had the conversation about what they're feeling right then, how they'd like to come back into work, what their expectations are, understanding that's a fluid plan because things change, emotions change, what you're looking for changes, how you feel changes, and having those conversations and those pickup points and working with the employee. And that's also chucking that to the employee of saying, have a plan for when you're coming back and work together to find that solution, through to a parent who may have older children, sort of speaking to them, and maybe what they've been doing previously worked great, but now it doesn't. Someone who's got maybe more than one child, the cost of childcare is phenomenal. So maybe them finishing shorter days. It's just having those conversations to understand the need, you know, through to if it is a family that's divorced and maybe you're talking to the father and the father could have longer weekends, maybe have a Friday to a Monday, those kind of conversations. And it's being as an employer just to be open. And I know that when I used to headhunt for people, and you get the standard, you know, you'd have your big corporates who want people from big corporates from the same sector, or smaller businesses who wanted to attract the big corporate names on the CV to come and work for them. And at the time, it was this whole thing about working for a big corporate, and you go from one to another, and it was just going frying pan fire, but you'd probably get an extra 15 grand for it. Whereas now there's a real opportunity. If you can offer that conversation to an employee, and it doesn't mean that you give everything, it means you talk, you understand, you look at what works and you make something work out, that can mean so much more to somebody than the extra 10-15 grand. You know, once you start throwing in tax and get over tax parts, you know, that isn't 10-15 grand, isn't that much, and that sounds very privileged to say, but once tax and all that kind of thing hits, but talking to someone about, yeah, we give you flexibility, yeah, you can work from home when you need to, yeah, we trust you, whether you're in the office, sat at that desk, or at home, we trust you to get that work done. That is not a problem for us. You know, oh, you need that sick day because your child's got ill, or you know you're lucky enough to be able to have your child a bit longer with regards to your partner's away and you're divorced, so you're going to look after them for the, you know, for x days. It's just being known that you can pick that conversation up, and I think that is worth so much more than a pay rise. And I don't think the market's getting it, but I think the smaller businesses are starting to get it. And I think that's why a lot of people are leaving corporates disillusioned to go to work for these smaller firms, because they may not yet be able to offer the salary, but they can offer the lifestyle and the career.
You're not sacrificing.
And when it comes to returning into the workplace, I mean, our survey probably, you know, says it all, but there's so much that can be done then. And again, I'm dealing with large corporates who genuinely, they're picking the phone up to me and they're saying, right, we need to attract X people back because there's a skill shortage into our marketplace. We're trying to attract the people that we lost as returners. Ah, right. Okay. Well, I speak to those people who have got very strong opinions on what they went through, battle scars of what they've gone through that's left them somewhere, and broken parts of them as well. And now you're spending more money than you would have spent on them to support their return to attract them back into the marketplace. It just doesn't make sense. It's like, when is someone going to go, well, actually, if we hadn't lost them in the first place and we'd supported them, we wouldn't have a skill shortage because we looked after them, and we wouldn't now be paying an absolute fortune to try and recruit them back into the marketplace. But they're recruiting them back into the marketplace. That hasn't changed.
That's bonkers, isn't it?
It's just like crazy.
Yeah, it's, oh gosh, it's it sounds like it is an opportunity for employees to have a wider conversation about values, about the psychological safety of all its employees, about perceived safety to be able to come to the workplace and bring your whole self to work.
Yeah.
You know, whether that's kids, whether you're gay, non-binary, you know, whatever it is, that just being open to that kind of conversation could lead to loads of good stuff for the employee, but also better workplaces where people feel more engaged, have more fun at work, have that loyalty. And it just seems bonkers sitting on this side of the fence that people aren't doing that. You know, the bigger corporations aren't doing that. But you're absolutely right. There is an opportunity for the smaller employers to get it right now.
Yeah, I mean, when we were doing some work with employers with regards to how to support employees, I was dealing with a large telecom firm who at the time were looking to deal with supporting their real technical staff who had to be on site 24/7. So they'd almost got a bit of the issue that we talked about previously, which was, oh, well, you're giving all this flexibility to these other staff. We don't get those benefits. You know, aren't we important? It almost gone the complete other way for them. And they were feeling that they weren't getting the benefit. And the employer, fabulous employer, is going, right, well, you know, what can we do? How can we sort this? You know, they were paying for taxis to get them because they were working obviously through the night because they had to due to their roles, getting them home. They were giving them additional days off, etc. And I knew someone had done some really good work in this space from a financial sector. So we managed to get two of the senior players around a board table, just have a chat with a coffee and just look at, right, why can't we do this? Why, you know, why can't these roles be flexible working roles? Why can't we change these hours? Why can't we do this? How do we work it? And it was simply looking at somebody's different mindset on how to do it, who was also dealing with roles that had to be within the office due to what they were dealing with and the sensitivity of data. And looking at his solution about how he didn't see it as a problem. He just saw it as an analytical issue of how he could resolve it.
Right.
Off he went on his spreadsheet and just, he basically goes, well, I just looked at it like holiday or sickness. He goes, that's how I factored it in. You know, it's no different to somebody potentially needing some flexibility on this to factoring it in like you would do. Oh, well, likelihood is X employees are going to need holiday within this period. How do we cover this? How do we do that? And they had a really great chat and went back with some really great ideas. But it's this mindset of, but we've always done it this way. And I think the best phrase that I always hear is, oh, but we don't want to offer that because then everyone else is going to ask for it. And it's just like, well, doesn't that tell you something? If you were terrified that everyone's going to ask for it, do you maybe think that everyone might have a need for it? And not everybody. Flexible working isn't working from home. Flexible working is so many different shapes or forms. It's having a flexibility in your normal structure.
Well, let's talk about what you hoped was the great leveler, i.e. the pandemic we've just lived through. And we had a little chat before the podcast, didn't we, about the opportunity that employers have right now to circumnavigate the great resignation and be a little bit smart about what they offer, be a little bit human-centric about what they offer in order to attract people who really don't want to go back to the office and do things the way that they've always been done because it doesn't work for them anymore, or they just don't want to, or they want a bit more balance. What's your thoughts on what we can do here to help people?
I think, and this is probably going to sound really harsh, I think businesses have got to get over their egos and their brand. Gone are the days when, maybe they're not gone and that's the issue, but, you know, oh, well, they want to work for us. You know, we are the pinnacle of, you know, we're the old established boys crew. So you always want to work for us. You want our name on our CV. And I think it needs to change because I speak to so many amazing, amazing men and women, mainly women, because initially they're the people who really get the brunt of it. And to give you an example of one lady who really did flip it on her head, and maybe this shows the loss to those businesses, so hopefully they will change. She was working within one of the large corporates. She was very intelligent. She had to write very detailed documents to help win multi-million pound bids. But she was never seen as one of the team, as in that hierarchical team, because she hadn't gone to a certain school, she didn't have a certain degree, she didn't have a certain job title. Mm. But she facilitated and was very much part of that team. She had two children, she had twins, she needed flexibility. She had keys thrown at her to go and get people shopping out of cars or, you know, forgotten papers. She had horrific things, which really left this lady scarred. This lady is now working in one of the most forward-thinking, cutting-edge industries. She said, no, I'm not doing it anymore. I believe in myself. She has worked for some of the biggest names within her corporate. She's pitched and put together TV shows with regards to within her industry. And when she's been pushed back, she's pushed back and been confident and known her self-worth. But I think the problem is the businesses, what they value, I'm probably not saying this correctly, but and maybe that's more within maybe your legal, your finance sectors, and maybe technology's got it a little bit more on the money with how they do. But it's understanding that, what does somebody bring to your business and your organization? You know, why are they within your business and organization? Are they there because you believe they're adding value, which they certainly should be, because if not, why are they there? And if so, how can you look out for them? How can you treat them as an individual and a person, and understand that a person in work goes home, and home doesn't stay at home, because home will come into work. That person's stressed because they've had to leave their child because their child's sick. If that person's got that dreaded nursery, yet again, it's another week where you've been told 48 hours, sorry, you've got to pick it up. Literally, this is my first week in the last 3 weeks due to Eliza having every blooming bug known to man. You know, short of wearing a hazmat suit, there's nothing you can do. But the stress that you feel, almost the anger you feel in that moment.
And the fear of having to ring your boss and tell them.
Yeah. Like, oh, that she's ill again. And then you've got a child who's got a temperature and you're hoping that it's this, but, you know, there's always that fear in the back of your head. Is it something else? And, you know, you can get to the point where you're not screaming at them, but you're resenting them and you're trying to work and you've got that pressure from work and you want to make sure that you always pick that phone up and you don't miss a call. Whereas if the difference there from work was, do you know what, that's fine. If you can work, great. If not, let us know when you can. You've got your laptop, et cetera. Log in when you know. We'll catch up with you. I hope everything's okay. Just keep us in the loop. The stress that then comes off, you know, that you can then get a load of work done. And you're like, it doesn't matter that I'm at home working. And I would say with COVID now, a lot of businesses have put in that infrastructure. So it's there for the ability to work from home. But it's just having the conversation with your employee. You know, not everybody wants to work from home. Some people just want a flexibility for drop off and pick up, you know. And it's just speaking, like, how much more basic can it be? It's speaking to your employee and saying, you know, what would you like? You know, how's everything going? If you could have a wish list, what would it be? How could we help you perform better at work? And I think we are seeing some businesses, because we're working with a few, that are actually seeing the fact that you are a part of your family and you are a person coming into work. And it's going back, I guess, into that, is it like the Lever Hume Port Sunlight, when he used to look after his employees and build, you know, the houses and make sure they were looked after and the healthcare, and saw them as a whole entity, which, don't get me wrong, you know, that's not going to happen. But just sort of saying and having a conversation, you know, how can we make your life better at home and at work with how things are going? And so many simple things, tiny tweaks, just knowing that option's there, will mean that when that person gets that headhunt call or extra money to go somewhere else, they'll be like, do you know what? I can go and have the conversation with my current employer if I feel that I'm being underpaid. But actually, everything I've got here, I'm not going to get there.
Yeah. Yeah.
And I spoke with a lady who was huge within corporate and everyone had been trying to headhunt her. And she said to me, I get calls sort of once a month from, you know, the people who are working, trying to get me to go over different packages. And they're always about money. She goes, and not one of them has asked me, because she was a single parent, about this and that to do with what I want. It wasn't money. They thought I wanted money and I wanted benefits. What I wanted was flexibility and not to be questioned if I needed to work from home.
You mentioned a phrase a moment ago, which I'd love to pick up on and get your thoughts on, which was self-belief. And feeding into that imposter syndrome, which I probably makes up 80% of the work that I do with my clients. So I see it all the time, but I'd love to get your thoughts on how imposter syndrome, what role imposter syndrome plays in this conversation.
It destroys people. I mean, that sounds like dramatic, but it does. I've totally spoken, agree. And don't get me wrong, when I'm saying about salaries here, it's not about salary. But to give an example in this circumstances, I had a lady who was earning £55,000. She had fallen pregnant, or wanted to get pregnant, tried to get pregnant. She was pregnant. She'd had a child. She was looking to return to work. They had made her redundant. You know, she'd had the conversations, which I'm sure a lot of people had, where it was, yeah, we don't want you back. You've got a child. You can't do this job. but that's not how we're going to force you out. But she was ringing up and she goes, I need flexibility. My husband has got a high powered job as well. I don't want to lose my job. I want my career. I'm very good at it. And she started off and she was chatting with us, making applications. Within 5 weeks, she was in tears on the phone saying, Tesco's have turned me down for shelf stacking. She'd gone from there. And there's nothing wrong with shelf stacking. But when your career and your set is in a different area, and they were saying, well, you need to be able to work Saturday and Sunday and do these shifts. And she said, well, the only reason I've gone for this role is because I thought potentially it's part time and it would allow me to do that. She goes, that's where I'm at. She goes, I've gone on the job boards. If you put in anything like over 40,000 for a part time role or a flexible role. And she goes, I can't even get a job in Tesco's. She said anymore. And she goes, what am I going to do? Maybe I'm not good enough. And then the roll-on effect, which isn't talked a lot about, and I think this is what's crushing, is the financial implication. So even if you're in a really great relationship, if you've been working at a certain level, you're used to having a voice that's been heard, and you're privileged enough to have a voice that's heard, and then somebody takes that away because you can't do 9 till 6 or 8 till 6, which is absolutely ludicrous. And well, you can't be in the office these hours, therefore you can't do this job, and your options get limited. And then you're getting knocked back for things you thought you would get. But then you've got to remember your salary is dropping with that. And all of a sudden you're seeing your worth in, well, I can't even get the jobs that I used to do. So your confidence is knocked and you're doubting what you're saying.
Plus your identity has been eroded by having a small person hanging off you 24 hours a day as well.
And you find yourself, well, I used to do this. Like you have to justify, well, I used to be here and I used to do this. And then you're going home and potentially, and you know, this I don't think is talked enough about, you're potentially having a different conversation with your other half. If you are, you know, do have another half, which is you need to change your expectations. Maybe you need to stay home or you need to go out and find something. Oh, I'm paying for this now. You're not. This is all this stress on me. And you need to be picking the children up then. If you're not doing this, then you have to. And all of a sudden you find yourself trapped that you're never going to get out of that because no employers are offering you solutions to be able to do that. And now you've got no financial, so you feel that you've got no worth because financially you don't have the voice. And it's quite strange when you lose that financial income, you feel your voice also gets eroded because you almost don't, you feel cheeky to be saying, well, actually, I want to do this. The thought that you might have to start asking for money if you've been self-sufficient. Your confidence in the workplace, you're just whole. And I saw so many people go from being confident to just getting eroded due to the fact that the workplace was like, no, do not apply, full-time only. And that isn't even going into the conversations that I'd have in recruiting where you're at risk if you've had one child or if you just got married, you know, that employers are a bit, well, yeah, I don't maybe want to touch them because the likelihood is they'll have another kid in the next few years. But that the ones who know that, that even have another sort of like hanging over your head and how you're supposed to get yourself out of that unless you have a great mentor, some really amazing friends, someone to talk to, who understands that your complete self-worth has just been wiped out. And it's absolutely devastating. And I can't, like, I've had people crying on the phone to me, women who are absolutely phenomenally amazing, who've had the most amazing jobs. I've also had women who, you know, have been very good at their jobs and worked really hard and may not be at the same salary band, but equally as crushed. And it's just devastating to know that I can't say anything to them because, well, this is the way the world of work is at the moment and has been for a long time. So I'm not going to promise you it's going to be different. I can give you tools to help you get back in there and connect you with people. But ultimately, this is a battle you're going to have to fight because there is no magic wand. And I think unless you have unless you've had great mentoring where you can center yourself and you understand where your self-worth comes from, I think people underestimate where we hang our self-worth, be it the status of our job title, be it what we're earning in a salary, through to when we're listened to. And then it starts doubting in, is the reason I just got dismissed by my husband or by my friends or in that environment, is that because actually I've just said something stupid? Or is it because they feel they can dismiss you because they don't actually class you in that space anymore?
It's not easy, is it? I mean, my own experience was, I mean, I was in recruitment 15 years as well, so I've definitely got the battle scars there. But I ended up going back to the recruitment world as a single mum. This is 2009, when I got divorced from my first husband. And the incredulous looks I got from people when I said I wanted to work part-time in recruitment was, you know,
put down, didn't it? If you left before 7 o'clock, 7 p.m. on late night, it would be, part-timer.
Yep.
Yeah. In fact, everyone had sat there doing nothing but looking to see who was going to be the first person to get up to leave.
Yeah.
And there was one guy who worked in our place who used to pay the cleaner to put his cup of fresh coffee on his desk, and he'd leave his coat. He'd be supposedly the last to leave his coat over the chair. For in the morning, he paid her to put a hot cup of coffee on his desk. So the boss always thought he was always first in. He was last in. But because he produced the money in his own hours, it was never questioned. Insane, but they always thought, well, it's because you're at your desk.
Yeah.
And it's just, it is insane. Part-time doesn't mean you've lost anything. Part-time means you're bringing the same skill set, the same info, the same, you know, knowledge to a role, but within a shorter time frame.
Yeah, but with focus and a deadline.
And I must admit now, my hour or 2 hours as a mum of two is probably equivalent to my day of work without children, with how I could get streamlined and know what I'm doing and where I'm going.
Absolutely. Like, if you know you've got a 9 to 3 window, you get it done, don't you? I mean, I ended up setting up my first company when I was on mat leave with my second child, because I refused to play the corporate game. I refused to accept the dregs that the corporate infrastructure was offering me in terms of flexible working. So no, I'll do it on my own terms. I'll run my own company. And that was 7 years ago, and I haven't looked back, really.
But can I just say, how insane is it that we are, right, well, everyone needs to get to work for between 8:30 and 9 o'clock. The majority, I know there's obviously different, but the majority of people, 8:30, 9 o'clock, to leave 5:30, 6 p.m. Everybody's got to be on the same trains. They've got to be on the same roads, using the same public transport. So all of that, it's just insane. If someone suggested you that as a solution, you'd be like, you want the whole of the UK to do this at the same time. It's like, and you wonder why you've got issues with like transport and infrastructure. Yeah. It's like, the world is not going to break if we just stagger a bit of that. And again, it's this thing where people think when you ask for flexible working, or, oh God, she's going to come and ask for something, it can be the tiniest thing. Mm. You know, going in an hour later, you know, condensing to doing a larger 3 days. So you can then, you know, have 2 days off, and maybe your husband, if you're lucky enough to have a partner, or your wife can pick up on those days, and they'll do the opposite. And also as well, it's very much bringing into the game the fact the fathers have to have these conversations too, because we didn't get pregnant on our own. You know, there are two people here.
Yes.
And gone are the days, and I still really don't think in most families, and please, like, people like challenge me on this, but I still think it's there, that mindset of the man earns, the woman looks after the children. And I think a lot of people will be surprised at what salary bracket or earning that would change. It's got to be incredibly high, or you're both very lucky to afford full-time childcare.
It's the unsexy conversation, isn't it, before you have that, oh, let's have a baby. It's the, right, okay, that's lovely, and we can go and go to buy pretty baby grows and all the rest of it, but actually, who's going to do the drop-offs?
Yeah.
Who's going to do the night feedings and not get into that competitive tiredness about who's working most in the next morning? I'm very lucky in that, well, this is my second marriage, so I obviously learned the lessons, but you should see our spreadsheets. So my husband and I, we're both self-employed, we're both co-directors of business, got 3 kids, and we have the mother of all spreadsheets color-coded. Who's doing what? So the kids all get to their different activities, and it's probably a bit militaristic almost in its execution, but it has to be that way, because we don't, one of our things is we don't want to drop any balls. We want all the kids to have one-to-one time and equal attention, yeah, and all that stuff, but it's got to work for both of us as well. And it's a bit insane at some points, but we've had to sit down and do that, so it feels fair for both of us.
And I would say, if you did speak with a lot of women, and I've certainly spoken with a lot of women, that feeling, and again, when we spoke about the imposter syndrome, when doors start getting closed at you, and then all of a sudden you're at home, and don't get me wrong, if you're at home and you're raising children, that is a blooming full-time job. And let's be honest, that's probably a very well-paying job if you were paid, because you'd be paying for cleaning, cooking, pick up, drop off, running off to sport activities, chauffeuring, health and safety, medical assist. You know, your partner probably couldn't afford to pay someone to do that. But if you're finding yourself that that's where your worth is, and all of a sudden your partner's seeing that that's where your worth is, and maybe that input in you having discussions about how money's spent or what's done. And, you know, it's even I would say to this day, and if she's listening, she listens to this, she'll laugh because she knows who it is who said it to me. She goes, when you have a baby, Abby, your life's going to change. Your husband's or your partner's, your boyfriend's, your girlfriend's isn't. And I thought, yeah, what are you talking about? But it was never truer. You know, I still think to this day, men will very much go off and book what they're going to go and do, and, you know, that work event and all that kind of thing, probably without a second thought, and then let the wife know. Whereas the wife, I think, will very much be like, can I do that? You know, will he be there to be able, will he be happy to pick them up? Will he be happy to do that? You know, I think we sabotage ourselves as well, because we're not, I don't mean selfish, but we don't grab that. And I'm not going to say me time, because it isn't me time, but we don't seem as forthcoming to say, well, I want this time on my own. And we almost feel potentially, I guess, and maybe it links into imposter syndrome, that we're not, everyone else comes first.
Well, there's always 73 tabs open, isn't there? Yeah. And it's not just, I want to do this, let's
do it. So what about this? Screaming.
Yeah, absolutely. Okay, let's talk about your survey, because this is some really important data, isn't it? We need to talk about this.
Yeah, this is where, if you weren't depressed before the beginning of the podcast, you're going to get depressed now. I promise it will lighten up.
It's just information, isn't it? This is just information. This is the starting point, and it's an opportunity to change. But go on, hit us with some stats.
So basically, we ran a returner survey where we were speaking with women who had had children and gone back into the workplace within a recent time frame. This was done in 2018. There hadn't been one for around about 10 years before this run. So we ran it, got a lot of coverage, national, etc. But 72% of the people who responded to our survey, which is over 1,300 women of maternity returners, 72% were management level. So a lot of people may assume at management level it gets better, you've got more autonomy, the company feels that you're worth more and they don't want to lose you because you're more expensive to replace. 62, when they were looking at returning, their biggest fear, 62% were concerned over childcare costs along with work. Now, any mum here will be like, tell me about it, let alone if you have two or three children. But yeah, there are solutions out there. Sometimes it's looking at nannies and things like that. But 62% were concerned, and it can wipe out a wage. 41% felt that they wouldn't be put forward for promotions or their career was going to stall. They thought that was ahead of them. 59% thought that their flexible working requests would get rejected due to previous experiences. 48% felt how they would feel returning to work after children, felt that it wouldn't be a positive experience. Mm. And we were just like, we asked them, 91% of these women that we asked said that they were given no support upon their return, no structured support upon their return to work. It was like, hi, you're back. And we asked those, and 92% said that if there had been a returner program, the support for them, no matter how long or short, that would have made a wealth of difference to their feeling within the business. Mm. And I mean, I know we're going to drop the stats, and there'll be a link as well to the fuller stats, because some of the other stats that they go into with regards to their experiences, what they've experienced when they return, it just consolidates those fears. I mean, we had 17% of mothers going on maternity leave felt no concerns that their career would be affected upon return. 17%.
Sobering. Some sobering thoughts there. So we're going to get a link to those stats, and there'll be a link to your work if anyone wants to reach out and explore further with you. Can you, I mean, that was done in 2018. It'd be interesting to know where these women are now and what decisions they've made.
Do you know what? I don't think it will have got any better. And I think throw COVID in the mix and how that's hit women financially and within the workplace and how that's going to have put back gender, you know, the gender pay gap, let alone the changes that's been made to how the gender reporting's been done. And they're like, hey, ho, don't worry about it for the next bit of time. We're not even going to touch on that. I think it's come to the point, and this again, full circle, goes back to why I started MMB. It's about connecting these women together. Mm-hmm. And it is making a difference. It is opening. It is sending down the elevator with an extension so more people can fit in it to pull it back up. It's finding allies. It's finding your own way through, supporting yourself with great people around you, connecting with people, re-networking with people. And it's using that to get you where you want to be, because you'll find if you're speaking with women and going, oh, they've had positive experiences, they're the businesses you want to be in.
Yeah.
Forget about the size of the business. Look at the culture. Look at what the business can offer you as a whole. And there's some really great businesses out there. There's some great ways to be able to do it. We give tips about returning to work, top tips about how to get everything sorted. But those tips actually could work for anyone at any stage. The private lunch club that we run, I mean, that's been phenomenal for connecting people. Because a lot of time you'll find that when guys are coming through business, they kind of get connected with their managers, they go do the golfing and all that kind of thing. And these networks are developed. So when you go to networking events, it's not that they don't want women there at all. It's that they've already formed these amazing relationships that there's no way you're going to pick work up, because they've got these brilliant relationships. They've kind of all come up together. So it's kind of connecting women in a similar way so that they can also use their own network. And I think that's the key for any woman and any man who's kind of feeling that doors are being closed. It's strengthening your network, getting advice, and don't be afraid to have those conversations and ask, right, what should I do? Is it how I'm putting it forward? Is it my actual work? And don't be afraid that if it isn't working with where you're working and you've done everything you can, you've had all those conversations, you've done that self-reflection, maybe it's just not the right place. Maybe they're not going to change. Maybe the problem isn't you.
Yeah. I think that is a beautiful glimmer of hope to finish on. I totally agree with everything you said there. My whole work can be summed up with the ethos of sending the lift back down, connecting, let's help each other, let's not accept the status quo and keep on striving to make things different and make things easier for our daughters coming up. Jesus, we don't want them to inherit this. Absolutely.
Sure that our sons change the workplace as well, and making sure that they start asking, because they, I mean, let's be honest, fathers want to spend time with their kids too, and they're in an environment where they're almost had it come back to them that it's not the masculine thing to ask, you know, that they'd get picked on, they also would fear demotion and not get promoted if they start asking for flexibility or time off because they're not seen as the team player. But it's like, why would you give your everything to a business and lose time with your family, lose your family, memories you can't get back, for and a business that will replace you how quickly? You know, work somewhere where you're inspired to walk through the door, that you love the people you work with, that you feel that you're getting what you need or working towards what you need. You know, it's not just about what you give, it's about what your business gives as well.
Yeah. I think we need to get that printed on a t-shirt somewhere, but thank you so much. Thank you so much, Abby. Honestly, your work is so inspiring, and thank you for standing up and being counted in the work that you do, and for sharing your thoughts with me today.
Sorry for all the rambling, but lovely to speak with you.
Thank you so much for listening. It's been great to have you here, and I hope you've enjoyed the episode. If you like what you hear and you'd like to connect, head on over to claireackers.com. And I'm most active on LinkedIn. Just search for Claire Ackers. That's Claire with an I and an E. See you next time.